Welcome to the Fourth Watch Podcast, a curated conversation with some of the most interesting voices in the media. I'm Steve Krakauer. Today we're talking football and the state of the sports media with broadcast superstar Kurt Menefee of the NFL on Fox. This is episode 51. From sports as an area to bring America together, to gambling as a component of sports content today, to, yes, T. Kelce and T. Swift. We begin with Kurt's role at Fox and the value of longevity. Thanks so much for doing this. I'm really looking forward to it. I wanted to start with your career. So 26 years at Fox now, 18 seasons as the lead studio host on the NFL on Fox, and 16 with kind of the core group with Terry and Howie and Jimmy and Michael Strahan. It's amazing. I mean, the longevity there is just in our field, in the media world, it's pretty rare to have that. And particularly now, I would say, you know, even more so in the last few years with all the changes that are going on in the industry. And so what does that mean to you to have that and to have that core group together and to be in that job for as long as you have been?
Well, I guess, first of all, you made me sound like the old guy here by being here 26 years, but time, it really does fly by. And as you said, it's rare in our business, particularly now, for any group to stay together. As you said, Michael is the newest guy on the crew, and this is his 16th season. Every other show that you look at, and I'm not disparaging other shows, it's just the way the business works. Every 2 or 3 years, there's at least one new guy. And every 5 or 6 years, there's a whole new iteration, it seems like, of people. And so we're fortunate, that we've got people that look at us at Fox and say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Let's not mess with things. And I think that's been kind of one of the keys to it is that, look, this is the 30th season of the NFL on Fox, period. The pregame show obviously started the first season that it started in 1994. And it's been number one every year since. So I think the approach is, well, if it's number one and people still like it and the margin continues to stay ahead of the rest of the competition and grow in some years. So I think that they feel that, and I'm speaking, my perspective from the way that the bosses feel, but I think they look at it and say, not only is it not broke, but the lead is not declining, it's decreasing. People aren't getting closer. People still love this crew and this group of guys. And I think a lot of it is just who we are as a unit. We're all great friends with one another. We spend time together in the off season. I've always said, if HR gets a hold of our text chain, we're all fired. So, we are personal friends and it doesn't just, happen on Sundays that we pretend we are. We genuinely like one another. Our families are close. And so I think that comes across on the air. And people that are sitting at home who have a choice about what pregame show they want to watch or what postgame show they want to watch, I believe enjoy us because they see it's a group of buddies who like being together and hanging out. And that's what they like to do on Sundays when they're at home.
That comes across on the air. And it's something, honestly, I want to talk about a little bit later about football in general and sports overall in America, kind of this communal aspect of that. So I do want to get to that. But it's fascinating to see the evolution of the NFL as, look, it's always been a ratings juggernaut when it comes to linear television. But it's even more so maybe pronounced now as other things that used to be ratings juggernauts, American Idol and the Oscars have kind of fallen off. And what's left is like the NFL. I mean, that's basically what's left. Why do you think it has such long legs and really continues to be kind of where the cultural, I guess, coming together still holds in America there?
I think there are two reasons. First of all, you look at it, and I think what you're alluding to is especially from a network television standpoint, but even from a cable television standpoint, linear television, period, sports and news is really what's holding it all together. You talk about even 10 or 15 years ago where you had primetime shows and you would get 20 million people watching it. Well, now, I saw, and again, I'm not knocking shows. I'm just talking about, but like the new version of The Bachelor came out with the 72-year-old guy. They were bragging that it had 4 million people watching that show in primetime. That would get shows canceled back in the day, but now that's a success because of the way the linear television has gone. But I think that part of the reason is because it's almost like, and this is me being the old guy here, is back when, you know, people first got an maybe way back when they got a Walkman, but certainly an iPod, it kind of changed the way that radio was done. You know, it used to be everybody knew the same top 10 songs. Whatever the top 10 songs were on the Billboard charts, everybody knew it because everybody listened to the same five radio stations. Wherever they were, you heard it in the stores and those kind of things. Well, then it became a point where you could have your own individual music and not have to listen to the outside world. And I think television has become that because of streaming. You can find whatever you're looking for in a streaming service at whatever time you want to find it. And that has changed the viewing habits of people. Sports and news are the two things that are still live that people want to be part of a community watching it. You know, the Monday night game happened. It was the Giants in Seattle. You don't want to watch it tomorrow. You want to watch it while it's happening. And whether you're on social media and talking about it, or when you go to work tomorrow to talk to your friends, you want to have seen it. You can't wait and watch that 2 or 3 days later. And I think that's the big thing right now. And, you know, sports just, it's one of the few places that I always make the argument. Sports unifies this country in ways that nothing else does. Because if you go to a football game, and I'll use football in particular, since, you know, that's really my background here.
Yeah.
But you look in the stands or you go to a sports bar and pick your team, the Cleveland Browns. The Browns score a touchdown. You see a guy who maybe makes $1 million a year, high five him, a guy who's making minimum wage, you know, a plumber next to a CEO. Everybody, you're unified while you're doing this, and you have a shared experience because you're all pulling for the same team. We don't see that certainly in the political realm in these days, but also just in the way people watch television. It's like, oh, it's a reality show. I don't do reality television. I'm too good for that. And people look at things totally differently, where sports brings everybody together in ways that nothing else does.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, it's like if you don't have anything to talk about with a new person you're meeting, you know, so often sports is the great connector there. I want to get to that.
It's a good example, sure. Because one of the things that you look at, and I tell people, you know, look, I'm fortunate to do what I do. I don't ever forget that. But one of the great things about it is I meet so many different people because of sports. And when I say I go back to, you know, whether it's a plumber, janitor, it's a CEO, it's a politician. It's musicians, it's actors. I mean, I told a story recently to someone, we were talking about this, and I was in a bathroom at a concert, and Matt Damon comes up to me, wanted to talk about the New England Patriots. You know, sports brings people together no matter what your life is about or what job you have.
Definitely. More on that. I want to get to that. But why do you think it is that it's, I mean, it's so true what you're saying about, like, you do not want to miss that. You want to be part of the conversation that's happening on Twitter while the game's going on and the memes that come up from it. It is, I mean, not to get too far afield from the sports world, but it is shocking to me to see places like a Netflix just dump a season out there and not have that cultural conversation that goes along with it to drive that, you know, to make that happen. And, you know, obviously HBO, it was a big Sunday night thing, you know, Succession, some people talk about, but it's such a small number of people that are being part of that. And part of it is just that they don't really embrace that anymore. There's all those, like, binge watching, and you watch on your own time. And I guess there's some benefits to that, but yeah, sports.
You can also wait too. I mean, like you say, Succession, it comes out Sunday night, but Sunday night, I want to go out to dinner and do something else. I'll watch it Tuesday. And then your friends will say, oh, did you see Succession this week? No, I haven't seen it. Don't tell me. You can't do that with a football game or a baseball game or basketball game. You know, you have to see it as it happens, because 2 days later, I won't say it's irrelevant, but it's not the same thing for sure.
Definitely. Well, all right. Speaking of Sunday night, I do have to ask you about the biggest cultural sports story in the world right now. I did not see this one coming.
No.
By the way, I looked at Extra's poll on this, and it was Swelsey and
the nickname
Trailer. It's a 50-50 split right now. So it is completely, we are not sure whether the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift mashup that's happening right now is, but you know, this was like the Sunday night, you know, where they had a million people watching. I don't know how many of those were Swifties.
Well, a lot according to the research.
Yeah.
You know? So first of all, I like K-Tay. You know, K for Kelce, and then she's Tay-Tay.
Okay,
so I
like that.
I've heard someone mention that one. That one seems like it flows a little bit better and sounds less forced.
Sure.
But, you know, I don't think anyone saw this coming. And it started, you know, 2 Sundays ago now, when the game was on Fox against the Bears, and they were blowing out the Bears. And yet that wound up being one of the highest rated Sunday games of the season. And in large part, because if you look at the demographics of females between the ages of 12 and 18, There were a lot of them watching that don't normally watch. Then they watched again the following Sunday when it was on Sunday Night Football. So those people have tuned in and they're repeat viewers. And so that's why you see so much of it. I mean, let's be honest. If no one watched it and people, I don't care, I'm sick of hearing about it. Numbers matter.
Right.
TV is in it for ratings. And if more people are going to watch, the Sunday night game on NBC wound up being the second highest NFL game all season, followed only behind the season opener, which happened on that Thursday night. And that's always a big number. But people are watching just to see her or see them or people that are interested that weren't before. Now, I think the one thing is that a lot of people pretend that there are a lot of women that didn't watch football before. And that's wrong. You know, I mean, almost 50% of viewers for football are female. So there are a lot of women that were watching before. It's just you're getting teenage ladies and girls and that kind of thing that are watching that are kind of driving up the overall number that is totally different. And you know, look, everything else with teenagers, it wears out after a while. So I'm sure that we won't be talking about this around Christmas time. That's my guess. I'll say it that way.
Yeah, yeah. I do wonder.
How many... That's how I look at it. It's right. Like, look, it's not the end of the world. It's not that serious. You know, okay, so what? Whoever's doing the game makes a joke or two, or there's a shot or two. It what's the difference between taking a shot of her versus Fireman Ed at a Jets game? You know, you the guy with the fire hat on. It's all fun. It's entertainment.
It is. Everyone's embracing it, too. I wonder how many of it are NFL fans learning about the Taylor Swift phenomenon as much as the other way around. Because
It is happening that way. It's certainly happening for me. My wife... I won't say she's a Swiftie, but you know, like she went to see her in Los Angeles this year, and you like really came away impressed. And everyone I know that's ever seen her perform talk about her live show and just about how wonderful and how great a performer she is. You know, she does 3 hours and like, apparently there are no breaks and that kind of thing. So you respect that kind of aspect of it. But I can tell you, I've learned song titles I've never heard of in the last 8 days. That totally blow me away. But yeah, so I think it goes both ways right now.
That's right. That's right. A lot of song titles to make jokes of and during the broadcast.
We're starting to run out. Yes.
Right. I got to ask you about another big star then, who was certainly an NFL star, but obviously crossed over, Tom Brady, who will be with Fox, I guess a colleague of yours beginning next year, it sounds like. And look, I mean, Tom Brady is, you know, truly, like, I mean, he's the GOAT, right? He's like one of the, you know, one of, if not the best NFL player of all time. And so I guess it makes sense that he would cross over and become a huge star, you know, out the gate. But I guess, you know, it was shocking when it was announced last year, the deal that he got, you know, in ahead of time, that, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars locking in advance. But it does say something about, I guess, both the power of the NFL and broadcasting these days of really being a value of like, what's the value add over the medium? Does Tom Brady bring people in? I guess the thought is yeah, they do. And the NFL being so valuable to them, that really kind of plays in the calculus there, I would assume.
Yeah, that's the belief. You know, look, people have to understand television is a business. Sports is a business, you know, and so networks are not going to spend more than they think they can make. You know, it's not about altruism. It's about making money. And so the numbers may sound crazy because we've never heard anything like that before. Certainly those of us on this side have never heard anything like that before. But you have to understand that somebody's done the math and they figured that they can make it back and then some. And that it's, as you said, it's a value add. It's worth it. And so that's how you have to look at that from a contract standpoint. But I think it does go back to kind of almost the original point we were making. If you look at it, linear television, without sports and news, it will probably cease to exist.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's what's left. Although it is kind of interesting. I mean, okay, Brady, I get. Romo, okay. And then like Joe Buck. I mean, that's what Joe Buck's like. Okay. Yeah. But
good for the vault is open, you know? Right. once that crack got in, everybody started. And once you do it, you know, it becomes like a salary for a baseball player or whatever. Once this guy gets it, then whoever's contract up next is going, well, wait a minute. I'm just as valuable as that guy, or at least, you know, 2/3 or whatever the fraction is you want to use. Therefore, I deserve to be making this, and it's exponentially more than I'm making right now. So that's, you know, part of the calculus as well.
On the NFL as a ratings juggernaut on linear television still, and the new way of viewing that's here and what's coming. the other aspect of this. Okay, so $27 million, like you said, big, you know, second biggest game of the year on Sunday night over on NBC, massive ratings on Fox and all the outlets for it. But I started to think about this because now we've got, you know, Amazon's involved and mm-hmm. and you know there was a game I was looking for the other night or I guess it was the morning game. It was like ESPN Plus, so I was really on Plus. So as you see more in, you know, there's more choices as we talk about like the streaming aspects of this. What do you think it does to you know, kind of viewership overall for sports fans if they really are kind of searching for where to find all these things on linear versus digital and other outlets?
Yeah, I think that's, look, it's a transition, if you will, that we're going into because 3 years ago, you know, nobody knew anything about watching games on streaming. I mean, I think the NFL tried one game on Yahoo or something. But, you know, other than that, you know, and now all of a sudden Amazon has, you know, 15 Thursday night games, and now they're going to have flex scheduling later on in the year. And as you mentioned, ESPN Plus, and there's going to be a playoff game on Peacock only. And so the NFL is doing it. And again, it goes back to business. The NFL is doing it because they're trying to find more people to bid and pay more money for their games outside of the traditional networks. But as more and more people get involved, as you said, it becomes harder for the viewer to find it or to at least know where to find it right now. Eventually, I think we'll get to the place where people understand it. And, you know, I don't know, whatever TV guide that the NFL will be a part of, but they'll make sure that, you know, each and every week, this game is here and that game is there, particularly the standalone games. And so I think this is just part of a transition that 5 or 6 years from now, it won't be that big a deal about where do I find my game. I think the challenge is really the people that can't afford all these different streaming services. You know, it's easy to sit here and go, I mean, I'm blessed and fortunate enough that, you know, I can afford to have Amazon because I have Amazon Prime, you know, but not everybody can have Amazon and Peacock and ESPN Plus and those kinds of things. So you're going to get to the point where some fans are going to start missing games. And the one difference that the NFL has, and I think that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, makes it so big, it's not regional. Like baseball, hockey, 100%. Basketball, you watch your team, your market. With these games, the people in those markets have to have it over the air. So if you're in Cleveland, you're going to get the Browns game, whether it's on Amazon or ESPN Plus, whatever, because that's part of the contract. But there are Cleveland Browns fans that live in Atlanta or that live in Los Angeles because people like watching the games or where they grew up from, those kinds of things. Those fans are going to start being missing games. And I think that becomes the challenge. Okay, how do you make sure that you get as many eyeballs as possible on your games?
Yeah, and there's another aspect to this also, which I want to talk about later, which differentiates, I would say, the NFL from pretty much anything, which is the gambling aspect of it, which is one side of it. But even beyond gambling, I would say, you know, I'm a baseball fan, but I'm an Orioles fan. You know, I like the Orioles. I don't really need to watch the Braves play the Brewers. I could care less about that. But honestly, like if there's any two NFL teams playing, I'll watch that game. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. And I do think that there's that's different for the NFL than others, where it's like, I want to be able to watch that London game. And I typically turn on a TV and maybe I have to look for the channel, but I do wonder, there are a lot of people, you know, maybe they're like old school. I mean, I'm an old millennial, but I'm people, you know, older than me too, who are used to a certain kind of viewing experience that maybe is changing now.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And I think, as I said, that's the challenge going forward, is making sure that you don't lose those people, you know, and there are various reasons. As you said, maybe they're older and you know, they can't figure out the streaming aspect of it, or maybe they just financially can't afford that. And after a while, you don't want to get to the situation where, you know, I will contend that hockey and baseball too, but I don't think they ever recovered from the strikes they had in the mid-90s or the lockouts that they had, because people after a while said, oh, there's no World Series this year. Okay. I learned I can live without baseball. And then it came back and, oh, okay, well, I'll pay attention a little bit. But if you look at the numbers of baseball over the last 20 plus years, I mean, it's just going straight down. And you can make the argument, especially this year, baseball is as exciting as it's ever been. The talent level, and I'm a Braves fan, so maybe I'm spoiled, you know, but you know, you look at it and I think that once you start losing viewers and letting them realize you don't have to live without it, sometimes it's hard to bring people back because they've given up a habit that they thought was ingrained in them.
Coming up, the communal nature of sports and Menifee's own history with seeing all sorts of America. That's next. But first, a little section of the latest Fourth Watch rabbit hole column, which I call I Don't Care Who Wins. It's not that I don't have political preferences, and I can see how certain outcomes will be better, not just for me, but for the country. But as I lay out in the piece, there are four specific reasons why I don't, quote, care, why I won't get emotionally invested in the outcome of the 2024 election, but really just generally in politics. I get that most people are not like this. I understand that you probably care very much who wins, and I respect that point of view. And I can feel the people who are saying, well, sure, you may feel this way generally, but this time is different. There's too much at stake. I also see how there's an inherent privilege in not caring, although for me, that privilege is what we as Americans should feel, not just me personally. I lay out four specific reasons in the piece, but the one I want to focus on here is my trust in the people. The overriding reason I don't care who wins is because I trust us much more than I trust any single politician of any party. My daily interactions with real people, IRL, are so divorced from the divisiveness and nonsense of Twitter or any other social media platform. It gives me great hope that when shit hits the fan, no matter what it is, we can rely on each other and we're going to be fine. In nearly every major story of the past few years, from COVID pandemic to the natural disaster in Maui to others, people helping each other has been a far more successful formula for actual progress than relying on the government. We're a resilient bunch. We could take what comes our way. More on that and more with Kurt coming up. But I want to tell you that the full Fourth Watch podcast is available exclusively to paid subscribers on Substack. Full Fourth Watch podcast is on Substack. Paid subscribers get a whole bunch of extra content from original deep dive columns, like the one I was just talking about called Rabbit Hole, to the full podcasts each episode. Check it out, just $5 a month, $50 for a year at fourthwatch.media. Now back to Kurt Menefee. You mentioned that, you know, sports and news are the two big areas where, that are keeping people or keeping linear television kind of in business or live television. But those are two very different aspects of it. You know, the divisiveness of what is our news coverage these days is right at the forefront. Cable news, you know, everyone's kind of got a team jersey on even more so maybe than sports. Whereas sports, you know, really brings people together in what feels like a culture that's increasingly divided. You know, the NFL, and I guess I wonder for you especially as someone who's so steeped in this, like you talked about, you know, meeting Matt Damon at the urinal, but really just like the everyday people you encounter, do you hear this kind of thing? Are people saying like this is the thing that's grounding me to either my community or to some sort of positive feeling about the country or about kind of connecting us, but better than maybe the politics are?
I don't know if I've heard people talk about it specifically. You know, I'll be honest, but I think you can see the examples. As I said, just look at the crowd in the stadium or go to a sports bar or just, you know, whatever town you're in, talk about whatever game happened last night. And people come from different backgrounds or have different lives that don't agree on a lot of things, but they'll talk about that was a heck of a play, you know, by, you know, whatever their favorite player is or their favorite team, or even just the game they watch, they may not even have a rooting interest. And I think you, from an anecdotal standpoint, I certainly hear it, but I don't know if I hear people saying, hey, this brings us together unlike anything else. But it's something that certainly I think is evident, you know, just by watching and looking at the faces and talking to people about their backgrounds. If you wind up doing a survey or an interview, again, walk into any sports bar on a Saturday or a Sunday when games are going on, football games, and you're going to hear people from all over the place, all over that town, that city, that neighborhood, you know, whatever the rural area, that people like getting together because I think in large part, there's so few communal experiences that we have right now. And part of that is the divisiveness of not just cable news, of this country and the politics that are involved and forcing people to wear a team jersey or pick a side. There are very few places they go, I can just be, and I can just relax, and I can just have a good time. And sports is one of the few places, you know, that still exists. You know, I think the movie theaters, we lost a lot of that during the pandemic that hasn't bounced back. And I know, you know, we had the summer of, Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember what the name was together.
Barbenheimer.
Yeah. So, you know, that was one of the things, but that was a fleeting moment. You know, now it's gone again. People still don't go to the movie theaters. So sports and the NFL in particular is one of the few places I think people feel it's okay to just relax and just have a good time and not worry about what someone else thinks or what their opinion is or who they support.
Yeah. And it's honestly, I mean, you know, I would say there's been some deviations even within the sports media world, whether it's ESPN or others, where, you know, I think one of the great traits of what, you know, the NFL on Fox has is that, you know, you go in there and you know what you're getting. You're going for a specific reason. They're feeding what your interest is in football and sports mm-hmm. in the game. And to have sports media deviate from that stated mission can have some, you know, some ramifications that maybe are not, you know, are not going to keep everybody there that wanted to be there.
Yeah. You know, I think it's hard to escape the fact that I don't care what it is, whether it's sports or media or news, humans are involved.
Yeah.
And humans are not going to make perfect decisions every single time. Sometimes you go too far one way or too far the other or not far enough. You're always dealing with that. But I think you have to have a guiding star, so to speak, that you go, okay, maybe I fall a little bit this way today, but I'm never going to stray away from that being the guiding post that we're going towards, because this is the mission. This is where I'm supposed to go. This is the lane that I'm supposed to stay in. You know, and I think we've all seen that over the years, that there are issues that come up that cross over outside of the sports world that you're asked to have an opinion on or provide some insight on. And I think it's our responsibility to do that as well. But you do that, and again, you try and keep it in its little pocket and not that let that become the overarching theme of what you try and do, nor let it become your mission. And I think that's where it gets lost sometimes, is that we are blessed and fortunate to have the platform that we do. And, you know, and you try and use it for the good of society, to make the world a better place. But sometimes that good and making the world a better place is realizing that people just want to see football scores and they just want to laugh on a Sunday morning, because the rest of the time they've been beat over the head with a bunch of other stuff that just drives them crazy. And so sometimes that's your role, you know, and you just got to realize that. And I think as long as you do that, then you're going to be able to succeed. But also I think you're allowed the leeway that when you do go, okay, you know what, this is an issue that needs to be addressed that falls outside of the normal purview of a football game, then people allow you that because they don't feel like you're doing it all the time, nor are you preaching to them, nor are you trying to tell them what to think. It's just like, okay, maybe I agree, maybe I disagree, but that's it. And that was 3 minutes of that. And now we're back on to whatever else is going on. And I won't hear about that anymore.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, people develop that trust. I wonder how much of it, I was looking at some of your background. I mean, you've lived in so many different places, lived or worked, Chicago, Florida, New York, California, Iowa, Wisconsin, yeah. Texas, yeah. Alaska, did I see?
No, never in Alaska. Yeah,
I was like, I just saw that. I was like, I don't know if I did. But all the other places, different places, yeah. All yes. Over the country. Mm-hmm. How much of that plays into how you see, you know, the job by being around so many different groups of people?
I think 1,000%, you know, because I think all of that leads into who I am. Because I go, you know, look, there are lots of people that have jobs in multiple places or go to school in multiple places. But I have the benefit of, I grew up in Atlanta. I went to college in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I've lived in Madison, Wisconsin, as you said, Dallas. So I've done big cities. I've done rural areas. I've done the Midwest, the Southwest, the Northeast, the Southeast, the West Coast. Like, but I have experienced life in all these different places. So for me, when people try to talk about America and what it means and what people believe, I, at least in my opinion, I've sampled so many different places. I've got a better understanding as opposed to someone. And this goes in all directions. There are people that live in big cities that look down their noses at people that live in small towns. And there are people that live in small towns that think that everyone who lives in a big city is a jerk. And it doesn't work that way. There are good people and bad people everywhere, wherever you go. But it's not just about the good and bad. It's just about understanding what, in part, brings people together, what they have in common. I'd like to see more about, because I truly believe that we, 80% of everything people agree on, it's the 20% that we disagree on that winds up getting exploited, or people try to exploit it. And that comes from politicians, that comes from the news media, that comes from even everyday folks in many aspects. But I like to look at the 80%, and I feel like I've got a better grasp on what that 80% is by having lived in different areas, by having been exposed to different people. You know, you talk about ethnic backgrounds, you know, in New York City or Los Angeles or in Iowa or in Florida. Age, different age groups. sexual orientations, all these things, I feel like I've been exposed to a little bit here, a little bit there, maybe more in some places, maybe less in others, but still it gives me a foundation to be able to go and have a little bit of confidence about what I'm talking about and that it might be what people feel or what they, or appeals to them. I should say it that way. Not that necessarily they feel that way, but it certainly appeals to them. And I think that not enough people do that. I think so many of us, you know, if you look at it, and again, it's not just media and sports. So many of us grow up in an area and kind of live within a certain radius of that area our whole lives. Yeah. And we think we know what people in other parts of the country are like, but we haven't been exposed to them other than maybe we went on vacation somewhere or we went to a wedding for a weekend. And, oh, I was in Tennessee and everybody's like this. Like, no, that's not what it is. You know, and so I am consider myself, again, I use the word fortunate because I do. I feel like I've outkicked my coverage in life from the standpoint of, you know, I grew up a poor kid in Atlanta. And I always go, you tell the 8-year-old me that I've gotten to do the things that I have gotten to do in my life, and it would not even be real. You know, it wouldn't seem like it would be on my radar.
Ah, I love that. I mean, you're speaking my language, man. The 80% agree with, I 100% agree on that aspect of things. And I think we need more of that for sure. All right. Last thing before the lightning round, I want to ask you about gambling. Foxbet closed ahead of this NFL season, but you know, you've seen it. I feel like every year it gets more and more of a thing. ESPN Bet is now in this giant.
Foxbet closed and we still do a FanDuel segment at the end of the show. So
Right. So, okay. Yeah. I mean, it's FanDuel, DraftKings. I mean, you know, the Penn is now obviously in bed with ESPN. What do you think this does to the NFL, if anything, the fact that what was happening maybe behind the scenes is now happening in front of, you know, more in the forefront rather than behind the scenes.
You mean from the gambling standpoint, that people who were betting on it now will just bet
it's
on
now
it?
It's mainstreamed in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I think that one thing is that it has an opportunity, it allows an opportunity. That's a good question, because I think if you're gambling, you're watching the game till the end or till it's decided, you know, if you have the over and one team does it in the first half, you're good. But, you know, in general, I think it keeps people around a lot longer. But I think those people that were gambling are gambling anyway. Maybe I'm naive. I'm not a gambler. Like, I'll go to Vegas, you know, with friends or whatever. I'll be at the blackjack table for an hour and then I'm done. I'm never going to get rich or poor because it just doesn't interest me. I don't bet on games. Never have, and not just because of what I do for a living. I just like, I can't control that. So I don't like having my money on something I can't control. So I don't think that if you're not a gambler, you're going to suddenly see our FanDuel segment and go, oh my God, I'm going to start gambling. I think it just appeases those that were already doing it and puts it out in the open rather than them having to call up their bookie. They can do it legally now, and the people that weren't going to do it aren't going to do it anyway. That's my opinion. It's like, to me, and this is probably a road maybe we shouldn't go down, but it's like legalizing marijuana. I think the people that were going to smoke are going to smoke or do gummies or whatever. But I don't think anybody all of a sudden going, oh, wow, I'm a 50-year-old guy and marijuana is legal. Let me try it now. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Well, those are both actually areas I would say that we're going to learn a lot more about how this goes over the next years ahead, because it's changing for both those in different states. More with Kurt, including the Fourth Watch Lightning Round on his mentor, prediction for the next year, and more. Available for paid subscribers at Fourth Watch on Substack. Go to fourthwatch.media to try it. Join me. Let's build a better media together. If you like the music in this episode as I do, check it out. Super Duper, that's Super Duper Music on Instagram. The song is Far From Falling. Download it wherever you get your music and download, follow, like, rate, review, subscribe to this podcast, the Fourth Watch podcast, on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts for free. Back soon. Stay safe. Talk to you then.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.